Welcome back to the Fast Lane on 101 ESPN with Cardinal World Series champ Brad Thompson and Chris Ronji. I'm Randy Carricker. And as we celebrate Last Dance, the story of the Chicago Bulls, we get an opportunity to visit with Wayne Larrivee. He, of course, is the veteran voice of the Packers. But when we tuned into the Bulls on TV during those dynasty years, Wayne was the voice of Chicago, too. And Wayne, first of all, thanks for taking some time with us today.
Good to be with you.
Well, Wayne, are you caught up in this Last Dance like we are? I mean, there's no sports on. We got past the draft. Are you as bought into this as the rest of America? Because you lived it.
Yeah, it brings back a lot of great memories is what it does. You know, that was a really special time. And you know, the personalities and the people on that team. That was a high point in my career, one of the high points. And it brings back a lot of memories. And I've been watching it closely, absolutely.
So are you remembering it the way you're seeing it right now?
Pretty much. So far, not a lot of surprises, a few here and there. But for the most part, it's what we lived back then. And they're starting to get into a little bit more of the behind the scenes with that camera crew that was with us, that NBA entertainment crew that was embedded with the team that entire year. And now as we start getting more and more into the season, the 97-98 season, I think you're going to see some really interesting footage.
Wayne, it's interesting in watching just the talent of the team again. And sometimes when it's 20 years in the rearview mirror, you have a tendency to forget what a special, aside from the drama that we'll talk about, what a special group and a gifted group that was from a basketball standpoint.
Yeah, especially Michael. I mean, for the kids who never got a chance to really see him play, this is the best player that's ever played the game. And I think you're seeing that in these highlights that we keep seeing. And you're seeing it also from the standpoint of the drive and determination that he brought to the party. When they made the finals, they never lost.
Wayne, was that drive and that determination that you talk about, we're seeing it here, we've heard about it in the past, but again, you were front row. Was that something you saw any time in Michael's life? Was that just basically him? He's driven all the time?
He's driven all the time. And, you know, the thing about Michael, it's like a lot of great players and leaders. They demand that you be good every day, not just game day, but every day. And I saw that in practice, and I saw that, game to game, obviously. If you came to a Bulls practice as a player, you had to be ready to play like it was a game, because that's how Michael was playing. And so I think that aspect of it really is a part of what, got this team to where it was. I mean, especially when you look at the role players around Michael, outside of Scottie and Horace Grant, Dennis Rodman, they had role players who I think probably were better because of the way Jordan drove them than they ever could be.
Do you remember thinking at the time while it was going on that MJ was more driven than most other people? Because I think to be a professional athlete, to some extent, you have to have that. And not everybody does to the same level. And now, famously, he's like that. You know, we know that he was just absurdly driven. Do you remember feeling at the time that it was unusual how driven he was?
Yeah, and it certainly was. He stood out, and you're right. I mean, to be a professional athlete, everybody, all of these guys are alpha dogs, but he was above the other alpha dogs. And in terms of his drive, determination, where he was going and how he was going to get there and get this team there. And so that was a lot of it. But I will say this, and they did a great job, I thought, last night of showing you when the Bulls became champions. And it wasn't just that they won game five at the Forum in L.A. to beat the Lakers 4-1, but it's what happened and how they did it. And Phil Jackson, as the Bulls came to the bench, forcefully telling Michael Jordan, hey, you're getting double and triple teamed. Paxson is open. He's hitting his shot. Throw the ball to Paxson. And I don't think Michael bought into any of this, triangle offense and all this other stuff. When the chips were down and when it was nut-cutting time, Michael Jordan believed he could not leave the end result to anyone else but him. And this is where they finally broke through with him, and he said, okay, I'll pass it to Paxson. Paxson hit one jumper and another, and the Bulls won the title. It was at that point that Michael Jordan bought into the triangle offense, and the rest is history. But I don't think they win 6 championships if Michael Jordan doesn't buy into that. And he did that night, and that's when it all changed, guys, believe it or not.
It is interesting you say that, because what you're talking about now, what you mentioned a little bit earlier about having to have Pippen and Rodman alongside of him, when we revisit MJ 25 years later, a lot of people talk like, you know, he carried those teams and that's why he's the greatest of all time. But he needed help, too. It wasn't like he was doing all of this on his own.
Well, when he left the game and then came back 18 months later, Horace Grant had left and gone on to Orlando, and that was supposed to be the next dynasty, Shaq and Penny Hardaway and Horace Grant in Orlando. And they played the Bulls after Jordan had come back and beat the Bulls in a playoff series. And it was at that point in time, Jordan and the rest of the Bulls realized, hey, they needed someone else. They weren't going to be able to get back to the mountaintop as presently constructed. And that someone else was someone who could rebound and get to the boards. They needed that element. And that guy became Dennis Rodman. And I guarantee you the reason why they bought into Dennis Rodman as a group, because they didn't like him. He was part of the past. He was part of their hatred in the past of the Pistons. The reason they bought in was because of what he could bring to the party. 15 rebounds a game. He's the greatest rebounder in the history of the NBA. They brought him in. They accommodated him. They got exactly from him what they needed and won three more championships.
Wayne Larrivee, the familiar voice of the Green Bay Packers and was the voice of the Bulls during those glory years of the 90s, with us on 101 ESPN. And Wayne, as we watch Last Dance, at the end of the day, it is a dramatic TV show. Was the drama around the team as palpable as what we're seeing on TV here?
Very much so. No question about it. There was drama, but it's funny because it was more, for those of us who were going through it, it was more like an entertainment type thing because, yeah, there was something that was happening. It seemed like every time he turned around, they mentioned that one incident where the Bulls went off on a road trip and Jerry Krause did an interview and reiterated that Phil Jackson would not be back as coach of the Bulls even if they won the championship, and that became a firestorm that affected the team and everyone else. So it was dramatic. There's no question about that. The Last Dance was not easy. It was not easily accomplished. And there was there were a lot of dramatic moments in that season.
Wayne, what is your take on that whole situation with Jerry Krause? Because again, I mean, you were there and around it. You look at it on the surface, and he was there overseeing six finals, but they're painting a definitely different picture. What's your take on Jerry Krause?
I think Jerry Krause gets shortchanged in history because, again, the only player that he did not put on the court was Michael Jordan. And now you're saying, well, that's a big one. It sure is. Don't get me wrong. But he put all the other pieces in place, including the coach, Phil Jackson, whom he had a beat on for quite some time before Phil was even with the organization. Jerry did a tremendous job of putting the right talent, engineered a draft day deal that got him Scottie Pippen and Horace Grant in the same draft. Put all the different pieces together, made a controversial trade of Charles Oakley. Wasn't something Jordan wanted to see. He was really upset about it, but sent Oakley to the Knicks for Bill Cartwright. That was a key piece. The Bulls needed that piece in the middle of their team. He put all of those different complementary players around Jordan and Pippen. He's the guy who had the idea about Dennis Rodman. He really did a tremendous job with that team, and I think it maybe went to his head a little bit, and he felt that if they broke up that team, he'd be able to build it back again, and that certainly was not the case.
It is remarkable when you think about it, Wayne. Think of an NBA superstar today having a coach fired that he liked or having a player traded against his wishes. Obviously, it's a players' league now. It's completely different, but they did a lot of things there that Michael certainly wasn't completely on board with.
Exactly, including Phil Jackson, whom Michael eventually grew to love. And in the end, and of course, with this series we're talking about now, that season, Michael wasn't going to come back unless Phil came back, and Phil wasn't going to come back, so there would be no Michael Jordan after the 98 season. So, it's interesting. You're right. It's a different dynamic in the league today. It's even more player-driven than it was then. But, I really think that Phil Jackson also probably doesn't get enough credit for being able to keep a lid on everything and keep all of these divergent agendas and personalities together and get them to focus at the right time on the prize. I understand Phil had great talent to work with, well, both with the Bulls and the Lakers. But, you know, other coaches have had great talent to work with and not gotten it done in a championship manner.
You know, you mentioned Phil Jackson and his demeanor and the way he went about things and should get credit, a lot of credit for what he did with the personalities he had. But his hiring in the first place almost didn't happen. I mean, there was the moment they talked about in one of the episodes last night where he showed up for an interview and he's just dressed in like a plaid shirt, you know, and you know, he didn't get the job right away and then eventually had to grow into that. That was Jerry Krause's guy initially, and he's the one who made the decision to make him the head coach instead of Doug Collins. So at what point did the relationship change between Jackson and Krause?
That's a good question, and I don't think there was any one incident. A better question for Phil Jackson, actually, Chris, but my impression was, as I watched it, it kind of evolved over time. And, you know, there's a byproduct to championship. It changes people. It changes people in perception of themselves. It changes the perception of those people, but especially how they perceive themselves. And I think that the rub may have been that Jerry Krause didn't think he was getting the credit he deserved for all of this, and that Phil Jackson was, and yet Jerry had put Phil in position to orchestrate this whole thing. And I just think it was over the course of time, people changed. You know, the agendas changed, and so I that's where I saw it. I don't know if there was any single incident to tell you. I can't sit here and say, well, this is when it happened, because I think it was just something that happened gradually over time.
Wayne, you know this, no matter the sport, every team has an identity. Every season is a little bit different. There are moving parts. But I'm interested, from your perspective, the difference between three-peats, from the first set to the second set of three-peats, and obviously in the middle of there, Michael Jordan went off to play baseball. He came back. From your seat, what was the biggest difference of those two teams?
Well, they were actually, you know, teams that probably – won that third championship when maybe they weren't quite the best team, but they won it as great champions do because of who they are, as much as the kind of skill level and performance level they had that particular season. But, you know, I thought they were very similar in that regard. The first three-peat team I thought was probably a little better maybe than the last dance team in some respects, because it was a younger team. It was a team that, you know, after Michael left, they went out the next season and won 55 games and lost to the Knicks in the semifinals of the Eastern Conference playoffs in seven games on a bad call at Madison Square Garden. And that's without Michael Jordan. So that team was very talented and had a very good upswing in its tenure. But the Last Dance team, as Steve Kerr has mentioned in this series, they were out of gas. They were running on fumes. Both emotionally and physically. Scotty had a terrible injury-riddled year. He really struggled and played through it. You know, Michael and certainly driving that team, and Dennis Rodman's focus was starting to fade. You know, that last three-peat team, they won on fumes. They won because of who they were. I'm not sure they were a better team than the Stockton and Malone at Utah Jazz by that point.
And because of that, Wayne, I think that kind of shines their legacy. At least it does for me. We saw Bird and McHale get old, and we saw Magic retire, and we saw Worthy and Kareem get old. To have a team win in their very last appearance together enhances their legacy a little bit for me.
I can't agree with you more. They did not get a chance to defend and go for a fourth straight title. But maybe there is some poetic justice to all of that, because we didn't get a chance to see them really grow old and fall like the Pistons did to the Bulls, like the Celtics did to the Pistons, and going on down through the different eras before. That exactly adds to their mystique, the fact that they were never beaten. They left as champions and were never beaten after that because they were broken up. They never played again together.
Yeah, that's what's amazing about the team, is that they were older when they did all of that. You know, you're talking about the mental toll and the physical toll. Well, you know, you're getting at that age where all the miles are building up, and it's just not going to be the same for you anymore. which is striking to me, because when people think about Jordan, that's what they think about. They don't think about as much how physically gifted he really was. And yeah, they know he was always physically gifted, but his first few seasons in the league, he was unbelievable. But we really, really remember all the championships, but it was leading up to the championships that he was so, so good.
Yeah, he was maybe more spectacular back in his early years. But what he became, and you saw it a little bit last year, was what I noticed when he came back, and with that Bulls team that three-peated, they really didn't have any time off. They trained and worked hard. They were in their 30s. They knew they had to train twice as hard as anybody else did in order to keep up with the younger teams that were emerging in the league. And Jordan led that charge. Tim Grover, the trainer, you saw him for the first time in the series last night. He was a big part of that. And they, you know, Ron Harper, Scottie Pippen, Michael Jordan, they worked out together throughout the summer, every morning, early mornings, put in a lot of weight work and that type of thing. And that's really what you saw. The difference in Michael Jordan was he grew into his body. He added bulk to his frame. He still had those skinny, thoroughbred-like legs, but he was strong upper body, and that's how they got by the Pistons. I thought the series did a good job of showing that last night. But Michael was a much stronger player in his the last three-peat than he was earlier in his career. He was probably more flashy and spectacular earlier in his career.
It has been so much fun to just watch this and see it play out again. Wayne, I want to shift gears on you a little bit, though, because, I mean, we got the voice of the Packers on. I got to talk to you about draft. What was your thought, man? The Packers trade up to 26. They take Jordan Love out of Utah State. Everybody was buzzing about the pick. Wayne, what did you think?
I thought that if Love had slipped to them at 30, that they would have to take a good hard look at him. I'd heard a lot of talk about how they were, you know, they liked this kid. They liked this prospect. He has all the physical tools. His physical tools are the equal or better of any of the quarterbacks in this draft. I've read that on several scouting reports. What you don't know are the intangibles. Did he fall into bad habits? Was his senior season where he threw 17 interceptions, was that a product of all the people they lost on their offense, that type of thing with the new coaching staff and everything? You know, obviously the Packers felt very strong. They moved up in the draft to get him because they felt like he can play. He can play in this league and be a good quarterback. Will he ever be Aaron Rodgers? That's too much to put on him at this point. But he's a guy, of all the top quarterbacks, I believe there were four of them selected in the first round, he's the guy that needed to go to a place where he could sit for two, maybe 3 years, and Green Bay is that place, because he's not going to beat out Aaron Rodgers anytime soon. And that's not a knock on Jordan Love. Aaron Rodgers is still a hell of a quarterback.
Wayne Larrivee, we always enjoy hearing your voice. Thanks so much for taking some time with us and reminiscing about those Bulls teams. We do appreciate it, and we'll talk to you soon.
Anytime, guys. All the best.